Hello, my name is Gail Whiffen Coyle, and I'm the associate editor here at Friends Journal. And today I'm talking with one of our February issue authors, Peter Taylor, who wrote a department piece in this issue called The Zen of Quakerism. And Peter is a member at Westfield Meeting in Cinnaminton, New Jersey, where he lives with his family. And he used to live in Toronto, Canada, where he worked as a social worker and practiced Zen. And that is the main po point of his article, The Zen of Quakerism, which is actually one of our department pieces, and it's a subscriber exclusive content in this issue. So thanks for joining with me today, Peter, to talk about your piece.
Thanks for having me, Gail.
Okay, so I want to start off with you actually grew up Quaker, is that right? What were your early experiences of Quakerism like?
My early Quakerism experiences, we went to Atlantic City area of meeting, which was in Atlantic City, New Jersey. So those are my first experiences of going to that old building down on North Carolina Avenue. And it was a big, giant meeting house. With about 12 Quakers in it. And there was a nice gym upstairs that we would get out of meeting and go play in while everybody worshiped downstairs for the kids. But it was mostly, I think there's a few other families besides my brothers and sister, my brother and sisters there. But my grandparents were also Quakers, and my father's parents went to Morristown monthly meeting, and my mother's parents went to Haddonfield monthly meeting. So we would go to Haddonfield for sing-alongs on Christmas Eve, and various events brought us to Morristown. And my father and grandfather and great-grandfather were all alumni to Haverford. They all went to Haverford.
Okay,
And so
wow.
we would go out to Haverford and see soccer games there when we were kids. So everywhere we went was there was these Quaker institution influences.
And I really like the part in your article when you remember meeting for worship as a child, and how it was like very difficult for you to get through all that silent time, and you would pass the time by counting things, counting people with glasses, counting people, counting the men, counting the women. And I thought that was funny because I remembered my time as a kid in meeting for worship, and I would just, you get so bored sitting there, and I would look at people and make up stories in my head, and it's funny how kids pass the time for that with that. And so then, and then you go on to say, like, you didn't really ever learn how to sit in meeting for worship. And that's something that Buddhism taught you. So why don't you explain a little bit about what you learned about sitting, physically sitting in meeting for worship from the Buddhist tradition?
Yeah, it was. I think the Buddhist tradition really focuses on the sitting meditation. Zen tradition, especially, it's just sitting meditation is everything. So, get that, all the other distractions out of your head, and you say your job is to just sit here. And it's kind of cutting through thinking instead of indulging in thinking, like all the counting and the. Like what your experience of just being bored in meeting and making up a way to get through, just trying to get through that silence however you can. And so our normal, and I also felt that there's this kind of impulse to speak, like you wonder what would I say if I was to say something. So you're kind of always running through potential ministries, you might say, when I'd sit in meeting, oh, I could talk about this, or I could talk about that, and sort of waiting for the spirit to move you, but you're engaging your mind. And it wasn't in a focused way. So you sort of, I mean, I don't know how I would have gotten. I did get older and get more into meeting for worship as, say, a high school student, because I went to Friends School. I went to Atlantic City Friends School, and then as a senior in high school, I went to Westtown. And I think that transition, where I was new in a strange environment, and then I get to sit in meeting for worship. That I felt was a very powerful experience because you're just yourself in meeting for worship. You're okay who you are, where you are, and everybody's quiet. And suddenly that boredom and that discomfort became comfortable. So in that way, the meeting for worship became was helpful, and it wasn't such straight boredom. But the straight boredom continued all the way through college. I kept trying new ways of sitting through meeting for worship, and indulging in fantasies, just running through visions, whatever I could do to spend the time. But one of the things that helped was just, and I went to Young Friends retreats. We did a at Haddonfield Meeting House one time. We had a silent weekend retreat with a bunch of young friends, which was fantastic. And that's similar to Zen, where you're just trying to break through the constant dialogue. What's life like without talking? So in that way, these kind of strange Quaker things that we did, which were fun and enjoyable, also prepared me for the Zen practice. But the Zen practice then, it's just, and actually my first real introduction to meditation came from when I was teaching. I taught briefly at Media Providence Friend School, and a teacher there was a Shambhala meditation teacher. So she ran a workshop and invited us all down and taught us to meditate. And that was the first time I was introduced to Buddhist meditation. And but it didn't, I sort of just let that fester for 20 years. So I sort of know how this is, and I like the Buddhist philosophy, and I, but I didn't really get down to serious meditation until I was involved in social work and was just dealing with a lot of the stress of the work. And I'd been reading for all these 20 years that meditation will help you. And I did actually experiment on my own. Like I'd challenge myself to sit for a couple hours at a time. And I could find, you could feel some benefit from that, but it wasn't a daily practice. So I think when I decided that I really wanted to use it to work on stress, then I started doing it in a daily way where I'd sit for an hour every morning. I'd just get up and start sitting. And that was before I got to Zen. And so that meditation practice is sort of what drew me to the Zen Center, because I talk to people at work about sitting meditation. They say, "Oh, how do you sit meditation?" I say, "Oh, I do it this way." And they said, "Well, you should go see this teacher who's right here, and he's a great teacher." And so I went and I walked in the door and said, "How do you meditate?" And they taught me again. And then that became a, that became my new practice. So I found that that meta, by, and then you have a group of meditators that you go with every week, and you sit for a few hours, and there's no thinking. I mean, there is thinking. You're constantly thinking. It's similar to Quaker meetings still. You have the techniques and everything, but you have a different focus where you're not going to talk. You're not about to stand up and say anything. You're just going to sit there, and you're going to focus, like you focus on your posture, and you focus on your breath, and you just keep bringing yourself back to your breath, and it really does cut through the thinking.
Yeah, that's interesting how you compare the two, because I think sometimes, often outsiders, they kind of think meeting for worship is like meditation. And I guess you could say it is like meditation, but that often gives the wrong impression of like what many Quakers how many Quakers approach meeting for worship. It is more about, being open to stirrings of the spirit and any messages from God, and it's less about quieting your thoughts. You're sort of like being open to like what bubbles up in your in your head. Although, there's no, I guess we can't say that there's any like right way or wrong way to worship. And it seems like the practice of Zen and the traditions that you learned from Buddhism sort of helped you guide your worship time a little differently. Even just like the physical way that you're holding your body can make a big difference. And I also wanted to point out another part in your article of the awakening to the true nature. Your true nature and true nature of reality, which is in the Zen practice. And you make this great comparison. I'm going to read just a little quote from your article. Recognizing your true nature in Zen and coming to a decision through Quaker process are both exercises in understanding our egos and ultimately easing our suffering by releasing them. This is a transformative experience that Quakerism and Buddhism offer. I thought that was really an enlightening way to look at it, and speaks to the very specific and deliberate way that Quakers make decisions through Quaker process. So how did you how did do you still believe that today? Like what is your worship and your spiritual practice looked like today, now that you're back in New Jersey, on the East Coast in the US, going to meeting now.
The spiritual practice is now more, it's much more involved with the community. In terms of Westfield meeting has the Westfield Friends School attached to it. So working on the school board is part of the practice, and that involves a whole lot more meetings for business and meetings to solve real life problems. Like you're out there, you're really putting your faith to the practice of saying, here we are engaging with whatever problems come our way, and we want to do this in a spiritual, deliberate way. And there's a lot of different people involved with a lot of different agendas, and you always have to keep bringing it back to the spirit and hearing everybody and seeing how you react, and you're constantly in that process of trying to come to the truth. You're trying, so it's not just sitting quietly and letting it all bubble up, but it's actively working it. And then that those periods of quiet reflection are, they help everything gel. So sitting and meeting with, so you can be have all these conflicts that come up in committee work, and then sit in meeting with people and really appreciate the essence of them and the essence of the work that we're all doing together. And it's more, I think it's more engaged than my Zen practice in Toronto in terms of really working with the people towards world goals. Other than, just the simple practice of meditation, and the Zen has changed my practice in that I do find creating personal peace, really settling your own mind and being in a place where you can quickly return to the center all the time is a way of making peace in the world. Like you can't just be really angry and go make peace. So that's the rub, as you say. Let me work with this anger. Let me work with this stuff that is me. And Zen has more of a get rid of that. I mean, the Buddhist idea that of no self is something that's hard for everybody to to even comprehend, because it's, we all seem like we're us. So that I feel like coming together as a group and giving yourself over to the wisdom of the group is a great spiritual exercise. And that's what I'm getting at in that is, like, together we are something that's more like what we are than we are as individuals. So the Quaker decision-making process really relies on that, and we all have to come to the table with the same intention of of growing through each experience, each decision that we make together.
Yeah, so. That's great. Well, we really enjoy hearing from people who have, you know, crafted their worship practice and their view of Quakerism to fit their unique beliefs. As you say, your life is an intersection of these two religions, and I think that's really beautiful. So people can check out Peter's article. It's called The Zen of Quakerism in the February issue, and there it is with an awesome Zen painting to go along with it. And that artist is actually an artist that, Peter, you know, correct?
Yeah, you know she's her? And my Zen group, she's my Dharma sister is what you call it.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's awesome. So her name is Rebecca Nyai. Is that right? Rebecca, and she is a Zen master as well. And you can view more of her work at rebexart.com, and we'll have that information in the show notes. Peter's article is our Faith and Practice department in the February issue, and there's that cover. So anything else you want to add, Peter, before we sign off here?
Oh, thank you very much.
All right. Thanks so much.
Love talking to you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.